Street View Podcast is part of the Dallas Public Library's Homeless Engagement Initiative, dedicated to increasing community awareness of issues related to homelessness. The opinions expressed are solely those of the individuals and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Dallas Public Library or the City of Dallas.
How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? You got it all figured out, straight from your cube. Life's a musical, maybe a carousel. How do you want to see it? What do you want to do? Perception starts with selection. The same streets you walk on, they carry their own view. This is Street View.
Father God of heaven, we come right now asking for guidance and truth and discretion as we go into your presence and utilize what you have given us, God, which is the gift of life. We thank you for love and peace and patience. I ask that the people that are in this room would be blessed immensely from coming into contact with you, and that others might be blessed through our actions and our deeds. We love you. It's in Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.
Sup out there, listeners? How y'all doing? It's Rashad Anthony Dickerson, that guy who has been doing this podcast about what it means to be homeless on the streets of Dallas. We're coming to a culmination here, and who we have in the show makes this a very, very special show. We have Mike Faenza, the president of the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance, also known as MDHA. We also have two individuals who are both dealing with homelessness. We're going to look at what Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance is. Mr. Mike, please grace the mic.
All right. Thank you so much. And I feel blessed to be here with you this morning. And I have that lofty title of president of the Homeless Alliance, but every day I feel pretty humble in that role. And, I have some strong opinions about homelessness. And although I'm not homeless, I started working with and spending a lot of time with people that are very poor in the 1970s, and in one way or another continued that. I guess that's 40-something years. So at least, come by some of these opinions by thinking about homelessness and people with mental illness and addictions. And for myself, at the end of the day, I'm just another guy who's struggling to make it through the night. I think that, and this is not held by everybody, but I think the most immediate response that individuals and communities should have to people who are homeless is compassion. And I feel like, given the state of human beings and spirituality as people on this planet, as individuals and as communities, we experience some compassion fatigue, and it's hard for many people to understand what a terribly hard job and emotionally draining experience being homeless is.
I disagree. I think, and I disagree with something, which is the compassion portion. I think a lot of people see compassion and pity as synonymous in that role. I mean, do you feel that way?
I don't feel pity, but I feel like, Nelson Mandela, and, listening to interviews and reading about him, especially after his death, he said that poverty is not natural. You know, poverty is caused by people, so it could be fixed by people. And, I think that when we get to the right level of compassion and understanding, we'll make sure that nobody's homeless. It's absolutely possible to eliminate homelessness. There's a science, or there's information about programs and services that make that possible. And we're, across this country, we're nowhere near having that level of compassion or political will to actually end homelessness.
Tell us a little bit about Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance, because I've heard you guys' mission is to end homelessness. So,
on one hand, we feel like we're making a big difference. On a bad day, feel like we're bailing out the ocean with the teaspoon. You know, I guess if I had to pick one, you know, answer to solving homelessness and doing things in a community where people don't have to struggle for a place to live, you know, it's housing. And so MDHA has been part of, over the last 7-8 years, creating about 1,500 new units of permanent supported housing. That's for individuals and parents with kids that got, that have the most severe challenges that are medical, mental, struggle with addictions. And so that's a good thing. But, you know, conservatively, we need 1,800 more of those apartments. And that's for people that struggle the most, that may have a mental disorder, may have an ongoing challenge with substance use and abuse, or have a chronic medical condition. We've accomplished something in that area that's significant, but we need about twice as many of those apartments. Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance is an organization that brings together local government and service providers and consumers of services. Our mission is to end homelessness, and I'd add to prevent homelessness. We're an organization that used to operate the Bridge program. So we were involved in the planning and the startup and financing the Bridge. We spun the Bridge off as an independent organization, and one major reason for that was that, besides, you know, managing and doing our best to make the Bridge a helpful place, which I believe it is, it's very stressed with so many people, is that we also do the planning and submit grants to HUD, to the federal government, each year for about $16 million in funds to operate 44 other homeless programs. And so our job is to maximize the funding and the performance of those agencies. And so raising money for one program while we're also promoting the interests of 44 other programs was a bit of a conflict. And so it felt like MDHA needed to be neutral, to focus on the whole community best we could, and that the Bridge would do best in, and I think it's doing well, in being its own organization. So we went from 130 staff to 9 staff, and you know, raise money to just do the planning and the advocacy and develop housing. In terms of money for homeless programs and services, a big issue there is how federal money that comes into the area is used. So there's that $16 million that goes to about 1,100 projects, apartments within programs for people with the biggest challenges, disabling conditions, including moms and children, and domestic violence housing for when, you know, domestic violence victims, usually women, are have gotten through the crisis, have a place to live. So we're, in some ways, we attempt to lead, often follow, but we're a unique organization in that we don't actually directly serve homeless people now. So we try to be an effective voice for what is needed. There's so many things that are needed, and to move the situation ahead. And our focus really is on housing. We're also very interested in how child protective services and relates to homeless children and families. We know that almost half of the children that are in foster care wouldn't be there if their mother or their family had housing. So we're interested in the mental health system, because We feel like if mental health system was more effective, was more accessible for people with mental disorders, there would be much less homelessness. So it's a pretty broad area of targets. That $16 million, it's all housing for people who are experiencing homeless, you know, mothers and children and single adults.
Okay.
And, you know, that, and what's been important to us, been important to me over the last few years, is that we're good stewards of that funding. MDHA always has a cash flow problem, even though we're much smaller. We don't get any federal funding for doing that planning and management and stewardship and grant submissions from, so that we don't receive any of that $16 million. But what we do really determine to accomplish is to have those funds used as effectively as they can. And there's one thing we do that's been a big investment of time and energy and intellect, especially from a guy who runs this homeless management information system. And so we set up a database and a program where all of those federal grantees, and then a bunch of other federal grantees outside that $60 million, that they collect data on their clients every week, who comes in, who comes out, what their status is. All those agencies have benchmarks, goals for outcomes about how stable people are in housing at 6 months, what's their employment status when they leave, what's their, have they gained ground financially. And so the submission, and every month each of those programs gets a report card A to F that tells those agencies two things. Here's the quality of your data, how reliable it is, and if there's problems, how to fix it. And the other part of that grade is, what are your outcomes for people leaving that program? So the submission of those grants each year to HUD, they're prioritized based on the performance of the agencies in terms of actually helping the people they serve. One of the, you know, really positive, encouraging things working in an environment where there's obviously there's just not enough money and resources to do everything we would like to have happen for people who are homeless, having some big hunk of funds where we really have some tools to try to get the most out of that funding for people that are struggling. So that's one of the most exciting things for me, that to actually concretely know that people that are serving, organizations that are serving the homeless, at least a whole bunch of them, are getting a grade A to F every month on how they're doing, and that it's really been information for the service providers that have improved their performance with people, because the executives of the agencies need to look at those grades and it could affect their funding.
So as always, I had to really, really sit back and think about how to come at these questions and how to come at Mr. Mike Faenza and ask. And I thought, what better way than to have a librarian? What better way than to have my co-host come through and give us a great look at the dichotomy between Mr. Mike Faenza and the homeless? Jasmine, please.
Well, I have a couple of questions from what you were just talking about. One is, how is MDHA funded?
We're funded by donations and grants from foundations, and also with the Homeless Management Information System, that program I talked to you about, we have contracts that help fund that operation and also the other part of our work. You know, more than half of our funds are raised through foundations and donations, and a lot of competition for that money. And again, we're selling, promoting that we make a difference in the effectiveness of services, and that we make a difference because of our plans and our advocacy to expand housing. But there's a lot of service providers that are raising funds who don't have all that they need to do the job they want to do. So fundraising for an organization like MDHA, and I've been working one way or another for advocacy organizations for many years, and it's always especially difficult to have the funds in place to do that work.
So how effective are some of these agencies? I mean, when you say A or F, how many are getting A's? You know, what is the big report card?
This was the, this, in the history of this federal funding for these agencies, this was the first year that the continuum of care, those 44 agencies, actually met or surpassed all the HUD benchmarks. We had about a 30% increase in performance outcomes over the last 2 years, and we believe that was largely driven by putting the data monthly and the grade in front of agencies, and then also sitting down and talking with those agencies about their programs, about their data, about their practices, and what they might do to be more effective in getting outcomes, which at the end of the day, we're having homeless people they serve not be homeless anymore. You know?
So you mentioned children and families, and yes. I think for our podcast we've primarily focused mostly on the homeless individual. So what is the outlook of homelessness right now? How many children and family are homeless? How many homeless do we have in Dallas?
Well, you know, and when we talk about facts about homelessness or data, you know, we talk about it's been a challenge for 50 years in this country, and certainly still is here. We do something called the point in time count, or the homeless census, every year. And so we count, we're always counting between 3,000 and 4,000 individuals that are homeless, including family members. And so, but that data, and it's broken down many different ways. The way that it is useful is to look at that count over years and see what trends are, because there's no way we're counting everybody that's homeless on one night of the year. We also always count the number of people that are on that night in January, the number of people that are in permanent supported housing. But with homeless children and families, last year our count was something like 1,300 individual children in 600 households. And so looking at those numbers that have increased, if you look at it over 10 years, they increase. But that number does not tell you at all the number of homeless children and families, because many of those are temporarily in motels, living with friends, or somewhere where they cannot be counted. So the numbers are usually much higher. But the thing for me for children and families, it's just a real simple thing that tips me off to how much need there is, and that is the fact that, well, when we were at the bridge, Bridge would pull together a group, say, of 10 women and talk to them about their experience, and 8 out of 10 consistently single homeless women have children that were no longer with them. And so moms and their children are separated on a huge scale, and I admit I'm kind of hung up on that. Because, you know, I had experience over my career working in the juvenile justice system, working in child protective services. When kids are separated from their moms, the outcomes for those children are much worse than if they were with their mom. So to me, it's like, in terms of homeless children and family, the big goal is keep moms and their kids together, and we ain't doing it. We ain't doing it.
Well, and I think people have more sympathy for homeless children, maybe even homeless women. But I think the reality is these single adult males were somebody's child at one point. And a lot of them have experienced things as children. And they are the children that we have sympathy for now that are just all grown up.
Yes.
And I think
that is very true.
I think there's just a bigger root issue when it comes to growing up in poverty without a parent or without...
Yeah, I think there's a root issue here in Dallas. There's really two. One is that the level of poverty in Dallas is so high. I mean, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, the war on poverty, our statistics for poverty in Dallas are like they were or worse than during the war on poverty. There's like 39% of the households within Dallas city limits live at or below the poverty level, which people don't think of Dallas this way. Think about all the great wealth and the vibrant city and the business. But to have, you have a third or more of the children in this city going to bed hungry some nights. And so when you have so many people that are so really almost desperate economically, it produces a lot of homelessness. So that level of poverty being where it is. The other is the availability of housing that people who are very poor can afford. Again, we could do a lot about that. And, you know, you have the Dallas Housing Authority that I think does a great job. It's serving, you know, thousands of people every year with the very lowest income, but it has a waiting list of 20,000 people at any time. And that waiting list is at 20,000 because they cut it off there. But we really, not yet in the city or county, have a plan to develop housing that is affordable for people who are very poor. And there's some solutions to that. There is, you know, some substantial amount of federal money that comes into local government that's used for housing and development, but very little of that is used for housing for people that are very poor. The preponderance of federal money that is used for housing is for people that are already housed.
On the show today, I have Don Forbeck.
Yes, sir.
And Leon Holman.
How you
doing? Don, tell us more about yourself.
Well, I graduated from high school in 1987. In 2 years, got two bachelor's degrees, a bachelor's degree in psychology and mass communications, television, and radio. And was unable to support myself in those fields after graduation. So I went back to what I knew, which was building cars and driving big trucks and working on the family farm. And
self-taught computer programmer?
Yep, self-taught from the eighth grade to program computers. Really, my biggest hurdle, my biggest obstacle is my criminal past. And everywhere I go, people are eager to talk to me until they find out about my past. And when they find out about my past, the door isn't just shut in my face, it is slammed in my face. And I went to a place that has a program that I could afford, that they were eager to talk to me until they read the application and saw that I had a felony. And when they asked me about the felony, I made no pretense at trying to cover up the fact that I have to register as a sex offender. And as soon as that phrase came out of my mouth, the lady didn't say another word to me except thank you, have a nice day. And it's been difficult for me to keep housing. And there's only one program that's available to me, but it puts me in a house with five other gentlemen. And that is something I would almost rather live in a homeless shelter than to have to share a two-bedroom apartment with five other men. So is there something maybe in the pipeline for people like me? That's my big question, and there are quite a few of us out on the streets right now.
Actually, to be honest with you, I was up at the meeting of the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance, and it came up. Somebody said, well, here's what we have in Dallas. We have a large infestation of sex offenders, and we don't have an answer for them. We don't have an answer of what to do. The ordinance of the city is two sex offenders cannot stay in the same place, which is why so many resources are limited for those individuals. And we really want to know, Mr. Faenza, is there a way we can help sex offenders, myself included?
Well, there is a way, but are we doing it? No. And it's people who have criminal backgrounds, and especially people who have a sex offense, you know, on their record, are not folks that the community at large really prioritizes. I think that sex offenders should have a place to live. They should have it's God's job. It's not my job or anybody else's to judge somebody. But human nature being what it is, there's a great pushback. I remember when the bridge was opening up, and I got a lot of bad press for the first year or so over a lot of issues. And one of them was that, there were a couple stories that there were many sex offenders at the bridge, and right. that it was dangerous and we shouldn't be doing that. And I disagreed and would not create a policy to eject or prevent sex offenders from coming into the program for the very reason that there's so little available for somebody who has that offense in their history, who wants to work and wants to live a decent life. Yeah, it's a big problem.
It's probably one that's overlooked.
And it's intentionally overlooked. When you have, when you have a situation where you have little children and their mothers that can't get housing and they're neglected, of course, people who have this offense in their background and then maybe judged in people's minds about that don't have the resources in the community available to them. That the program that you were in where you needed to live with four or five other people, can you say what that program was or say a little more about that?
That was through LifeNet. And I have been a client of LifeNet in the past. I do have some issues with bipolar and panic anxiety disorder, and a lot of that stems from some things that happened to me when I was very, very young. I too was a victim of sexual predator. And thank you. And I'm not the same person I was when I committed my offense 12 years ago. I'm just not. Will I ever reoffend? No, not if I have anything to say about it. It's unfortunate that anyone has to go without shelter, but there are more opportunities for every other group out there except the group I'm in. And I'm not saying that to be self-serving. I would rather stay on the street and work from the ground up to eliminate this problem than to go into a program where I would have to stay with five other men that more than likely aren't of the same mindset I am. And it's unfortunate for me that I'm going to pay for one mistake for the rest of my life.
That's very, very unfortunate. And we as homeless individuals know about different things, different limitations. Like one of the guys who I've met at the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance has been really, really been an advocate for the homeless. And he's been coming in and really pushing the issue to help the homeless in a major way. Mr. Leon, if you would, please come grace the mic and tell us a little bit about your initiative and what you're working toward.
First of all, there's a misconception about people that are homeless.
Yes, sir. How so?
Well, there's an assumption that you're a burden on society. You're not productive. You're probably antisocial, more than likely criminal. And, there's a segment of that ilk within the group of homelessness. But there are homeless people, I'll use myself as an example.
Yeah.
I'm working on my bachelor's in computer science.
Really?
I've already got my associate. Okay. And I'm not a ex-offender.
Right. There's also a stigma about mental illness.
Right. I'm not mentally ill.
Okay.
And there was a program that we had that's in existence here in Dallas by one of the social service agencies. And I applied for housing.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And at first I was, because I got in on the ground floor, I was told, well, you'll be the first person on the list. But then they made me go to another office in a different location, and I had to take a survey. And so they started asking me questions. Are you mentally ill? Are you substance abusive? Are you ex-offender? I said, no.
Right.
And then they told me, says, well, you're not qualified for this housing. I said, what do you mean? It's for homelessness. I need a housing.
Right.
And then we went back to MDHA, and they had to re-inform the agency that the first criteria for you getting in the program was homelessness. You can't exclude someone because they're not socially dysfunctional.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So my point is, everyone that's homeless is not socially dysfunctional.
Okay.
There are other issues that create homelessness other than just those social, you know, I'm not able to go to work because, you know, I'm mentally ill, or I'm strung out and I'm passed out somewhere.
So that's
or, you know, things like that.
So that's some common misperceptions about homelessness, is that you need to be socially dysfunctional in a sense.
Right.
So why are you homeless?
Well, because let's say, I'll give you one example. I was on a job and I was supposed to be repairing computers. Okay. And, you know, this particular company has 150 different models of their computers. And after 3 weeks, they told me, said, well, you're not fixing computers fast enough. And I says, well, wait a minute, I fixed three in one night, and I'm still in training.
Right.
Well, that's unfortunate, but, you know, we don't think you're a good fit. And when I was a younger person, back in my young adult days, in the 70s and 80s, they would give you 90 days on the job.
Yes.
Then they would reevaluate you.
Right.
They wouldn't just say in 3 weeks you're not moving fast enough. I said, well, if you want me to do, five a day, well, why don't you give me a couple more weeks? I'm already up to three a day.
Right.
So things like that are beyond your control.
Right.
You don't know whether the boss had a bad night last night, and when you're in states like Texas that have these right to work laws, that's the way it's.
So that's like just one of the challenges that the homeless face. But why are you homeless?
Because I don't have a job.
Okay.
And getting a job is one hurdle, and then keeping a job is another ongoing obstacle that you got to continue to try to overcome.
I agree.
You told us a little bit about your education. How you get where you are in this point in your life, and where do you see yourself going from here?
I came to Dallas from Atlanta.
Atlanta, Georgia?
Uh-huh. And when I was in Atlanta, Atlanta had become too overcrowded with people who, at my skill level, they just flooded in from everywhere in the country. Because when Atlanta got international publicity for the Olympics, people saw that Atlanta was just like New York, Chicago, Boston, L.A., you know, major metropolitan area.
Kind of like Dallas.
Yeah, like Dallas. And Atlanta always had an image of being always down south, and, you know, the Ku Klux Klan right up down the street with Confederate flags. But once that image was dispelled by the publicity that the Olympics brought,
yes,
people came in from everywhere. And the job unemployment rate shot up.
Yeah.
The cost of living shot up. And with me at the educational level that I was then, I wasn't able to compete with people coming in with college, with master's degrees, bachelor's degrees. They're working for $10 an hour, $12 an hour, and they're pushing me down.
Okay.
So
you came to Dallas.
I had a friend that lived in Dallas, and she said, well, if you come to Dallas, I have a house that I want you to, I want you to watch for me, and I'll teach you how to originate mortgages.
Originate mortgages.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so I came to Dallas, and the situation kind of like went south a little bit because she had more in mind for the relationship other than business.
All right, here's my question then. Seeing it from your perspective, what frustrates you most about being homeless?
Well, when you're homeless and you have to live in a shelter, and the first thing is, you can't really, I mean, you don't want to use the restroom some of these other guys have used. The hygiene is kind of, you know, the shelter they don't have the resources to have a guy to come in there and clean the bathroom every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So you have to deal with that.
Okay.
Then, where are you going to store your clothes?
Yeah.
You know, where are you going to...
So these are some of the challenges they
Yeah, face. They're challenges. You can't sleep. You know, when I was at, I don't know, can I mention the name of the shelter?
Go ahead.
I was at Austin Street, and Austin Street has You know, they make you get up at 4:35 o'clock in the morning. Every morning.
Mr. Edmonds was on the show, last show.
Actually. Okay, now, Mr. Edmonds has done a fantastic job of taking Austin Street from where it was, which was way worse when I was there before he got there.
Yes, sir.
And now he's moving gradually to improvements according to what his resources are.
Yes, sir.
Okay? Now, when you get up at 4:30 every morning, 7 days a week, you're going to get, you kind of get sleepy at like 2 o'clock. Because you never get to sleep because you don't start going to sleep till 10 o'clock.
Yes.
And then you got a guy sitting next to you and he's snoring or coughing and he's waking you up. And, you know, and then you, if you got to get up and, you know, use the restroom, you got to walk from here to the other end of the football field because it's a huge facility. So all these things, when you get out to try and compete with other people who don't have all these obstacles, you know, they're 50 yards ahead of you in the 100-yard dash.
Let's talk about that. You said when you compete, one of the things that I've noticed or really, really drew me to you was the initiative you've been through. Uh-huh. I want to say, you know, you're a prime example to me, a young man, uh-huh. of how patience and endurance will get you where you need to go as long as you're putting in effort and keep a positive attitude. Let's talk about the transportation issues that you've brought forward to the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance after being rejected so many different times. Talk about it, please.
Okay, well, in order to get yourself out of homelessness, you have to be able to get from point A, the shelter, to point B, the job interview or the other social service agency that's going to give you something to eat or clothing or whatever you have to do.
Yes.
Because you're trying to get out of the situation.
Yes.
Okay. Now, when you're homeless, naturally you don't have a lot of money, so you ride public transportation.
That's true.
Okay. Now, I was riding public transportation, and DART had come up with a policy for people who are on TANF, which I don't know what the initials TANF mean, but it's an acronym.
Yes.
They get a 50% discount on a monthly MARTA card.
Okay.
So that means instead of paying $80, you only pay $40. Okay? So I said, well, this would be a good idea for homeless people because we can get $40. We can get a sponsor. We can go out and cut grass or something like that. You see what I'm saying? So we can drive cars at the car auction. And that way we can buy the monthly bus pass. Then we can get around, you know, on this public transportation system.
Right.
We don't have to worry about, there's no interaction with the operator with, why don't you have your bus fare?
Right. That seems to be a common issue with our homeless.
Yeah. Okay. It's a very important issue. Here's my bus pass.
Yes.
And we want to find out if we can get that same discount for homeless people who I came from a shelter. Here's my letter.
Yes.
Here's my $40. Can I get the bus pass?
Mike Faenza is over the Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance. That means they're the umbrella over most of the service providers that we get. I know you've already asked a question about some of the services that are available. Mr. Holman, I recognize that you've been working with Metro Dallas Homeless Alliance in order to get the results for the homeless. So is there anything that you'd like to either share or figure out, because what we're looking at the top cusp of the individuals who can help Dallas or help the homeless in Dallas. So if there's anything within your scope or range of understanding that you'd like to get clarity on or give clarity for the homeless, please feel free to ask your question.
Dallas has a lot of economic power as far as, you know, we have major sports teams and we have, you know, major businesses that corporate headquarters are here. A few years ago, the Gates Foundation got $36 billion for programs. You know, when I talked to friends, I said, do you know anybody that's got any of that money? They said, no, we don't know. We just know that they said that they got it. And here you have the Jerry Joneses of the world, the Mark Cubans of the world, the T-Boone Pickens of the world. And to me, it would be, you know, wonderful if some of these guys could match what the federal government gives, and that would, as far as the millions of dollars, and that would give Mr. Faenza the funds he needs to provide the services that So why don't these multi-billionaires, you know, why can't they, will they help, you know, fund some of this legitimate organizations to help solve these problems?
So what are you saying with that? What are you head with that? Are you saying, why is we not getting some of this money from the wealth? Is there a problem with that 99% being broke and 1% being rich?
Well, you know, you'd have to, from my angle, say, well, wait a minute, what do you, you know, if it was me and I was a billionaire, sure, you get 15 from the million from the government, I'll match it. And, you know, I don't have a problem with that. I've got the other $985 million that I can, you know, function on.
You know, there's a lot of philanthropy, a lot of charitable giving in Dallas. Yeah, and I'm grateful for that, especially the funds that support our programs that serve the homeless and the disabled. But there's not enough. And when you have a third of the folks in the city living in poverty or below, there's a lot of room for more contribution from those that are very wealthy. And as I've become, with a lot of humility, I mean, gaining some ground in my own spiritual life as I'm getting older and maybe just a nick wiser, not all that smart. But, you know, I wonder, you know, with so many churches and such a strong faith community and you know, all the religions, certainly Christianity, it's about self-expansion and, you know, generosity and compassion. And there's something fundamentally wrong that we need to overcome when we have a city with the amount of wealth that it has in it, and especially corporate wealth, and we have so many people that are so poor without the responses in place that we need. And yeah, I would like to see a much stronger response from corporations, a lot more unrest within the faith community about the level of poverty. But corporations and churches and nonprofit organizations are all made up of human beings. And, you know, kind of our heads and hearts at this point in our development are set up to be pretty selfish and taking care of number one. And so I started out my comments saying that there's a bit of compassion fatigue, that if people could really understand what it's like to be in the shoes of you gentlemen, and, you know, I mean, maybe presumptuous of me to say, if they understood what it felt like, how hard it was, sir, you mentioned getting up at 4:30 in the morning every day, competing against the rest of the world just to find a place where you can settle and be productive, to even afford to get there. To be honest, my response to people that are homeless, vast majority of people I've met, is like, amazing strength of the human spirit in these individuals to be able to persevere and do what they do. But somehow the rest of the folks that got more have to be able to feel that in some way. But the kind of courage it takes to be homeless and just survive, you know, what I see is, you know, it's amazing that people do as well as they do with as little as they have. Most people that have somehow cannot put themselves in that place, cannot feel that, cannot understand what that is.
Well, and not to defend really wealthy people, but we work with a lot of donors at the library, and they do donate. Mark Cuban certainly does donate money. And they, you know, just like I would be particular about who and what I donate to, they are too. And I would say that it's probably not that they don't donate, it's that they've chosen not maybe to support homeless services. But I do think from a donor's perspective, I think they have, you have to ask yourself, what is this going towards? What's the solution?
Being a good steward.
Well, what is the solution to homelessness? So you're going to give, you know, $15 million. you're going to give $15 million to keep people homeless. You're going to fund a shelter so that these 3,000 people can still have a shelter to live in. I mean, what? How do we get people from there to being, I guess, the regular members of society that the rest of society seems to want them to be?
Maybe my perspective's a little skewed, but I think one of the biggest barriers to getting people from the streets to their own place is education. And not just educating the homeless to give them more opportunities, but educating the public at large about the homeless. Up until recently, there has been no face put to the homeless population in Dallas. Very rarely did you see a poster or something online that mentioned anything about the homeless in Dallas that had a picture of someone who was actually homeless. And I think that until the public's perception changes, the donations are going to stay rather static. And that's unfortunate because, and I say unfortunate because those of us that are out here on the streets are the ones that are ultimately going to suffer. What, you know, whether we be single men, single women, women with children, entire families, we're ultimately the ones that suffer because there is no public face on this program, on these programs, no public face to the issue. And I think that once that changes, that there that there's a public face or a group of faces that people can go, oh, wow, these are, you know, maybe somebody recognizes somebody from the picture on the MDHA website. Maybe somebody recognizes those folks and say, man, I grew up next to those people, you know, or something like that. You know, until the public perception starts to change, I think that's where ultimately the emphasis needs to start. You know, ramp up the public, ramp up trying to change the public's perspective on the homeless situation, and then maybe, just maybe, as the perception changes, so too will the donation strata, so too will the donation amounts, so too will all these things that, you know, we've been mentioning back and forth as problems or issues. You know, to my mind, that all stems from public perception. And I'm guessing that comes from my psychology degree, because, you know, if you change the perception, you change the reality, because what is reality is how we perceive that which is real around us. And I think that's where I would start, but I'm not you, Mr. Forenza.
That makes perfect sense to me. And being able to really invest the time and energy and resources to put a public face on homelessness is a terrific idea. And it's being able to have the resources and the energy to do that. And it's not all about money. You know, MDHA and our partners need to be a lot more creative and thoughtful about how to get that done and how to raise that profile of homelessness and the legitimacy of needs.
I'll do it. Yep. I'll do it.
Do we have, I mean, is there a homeless advocacy group in Dallas that's all they do is advocacy? You guys coordinate funds and you guys have your hands full, but, you know, advocacy is a lot of work.
MDHA, I think at our best, what's most important to me is that end of the day, we are advocates, that we move issues along and we say to the community, these needs are not met and we need to fill them. And here's a plan to get this done, you know. And also, I mean, I was an advocate in Dallas 30 years ago. I was here 15 years and went to Washington 15 years and came back 7-8 years ago. And their advocacy that is in your face and confrontive and shrill definitely doesn't work in Dallas. You could be advocates. There were many more advocacy organizations in Dallas several decades ago, and the voice was stronger, and advocacy and a call for action was seen as much more legitimate than it is now. And I think some of that is that there's a tremendous self-consciousness on the part of every major city about its identity and who it is. And because of information that's available, every city is competing, you know, against each other. Direct, aggressive, or assertive public messages about our current inability to take care of the poor and the homeless and the disabled are much more controversial and difficult now. And so it's a matter of having balance so you don't cut off your nose to spite your face, where you speak truth to power, but you do it in a way where you can be there tomorrow to do it also.
Maybe get with say there are 24 listed huge PR firms in Dallas and figure out how to maybe do this. You know,
I think that's smart.
You know, and like I said, that probably came from my psychology background, but I don't see, you know, I do understand where you're coming from, the aggressive, assertive, you know, just in your face, we need help, probably wouldn't be efficacious at this point, but that's not to say we can't get a message out there and go, look, we've got people out here that are underemployed. You know, in my case, I'm overeducated and underemployed. And that coupled with the fact that I do have a past that slams a lot of doors in my face, it becomes beyond frustrating to me at times.
And it's being able to get those messages out there and have them crafted in a way where people that need to hear them will pay attention to them and not dismiss them. That, yeah, we could use some great public relations marketing minds to help figure that out.
Can we appeal to one of these PR firms to come in and try and, you know, donate some services? Maybe you don't have to give your money, but donate some services. I mean, you see billboards for alcohol and cars and all these other different things that, you know, people consume. I mean,
I think we should work on that. I do. I think, I mean, I'm inspired by things I've heard here today, and I've learned. I have a lot to learn. And I think your idea is it's time for us to figure this out and work on it.
Okay, let's say I'm a PR person and we're going to put up a billboard. What would that message be? What message do you think the public needs to hear and know?
I would put a silhouette of an individual with a question mark, and it would say, I am the face of homelessness. I would do that. And then I would put a website to which somebody could actually check into it. Maybe a link to the Street View podcast. With that all said, I want to say thank you to you guys for coming out. I want to say first, thank you, Mr. Holman, for coming out to the show. And I appreciate you giving your time and your energy and your effort. Continue to do the things that you're doing in an initiative to help us as a people. Thank you.
You're quite welcome, and thank you for having me.
Again, Mr. Don, thank you for coming to the show. It's been great.
Thank you for inviting me.
Mr. Faenza, thank you. I recognize that you have a major role as the president of the umbrella that's blessing everybody's game. And we, the homeless, when I say we, the homeless, I represent the homeless in saying thank you for the services that are provided.
And love to talk with you some more. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for coming. Let's pray. Father God of heaven, thank you for the time that you brought upon us, God, that we might be able to sit together as a family and as a union, God. We love you and we love one another, God. And we say thank you for everything that you've done. I'm hoping that those who are in our graces or in our presence or those who need to be blessed will be blessed, God, and use us to your glory to do that. It's in Jesus Christ's name we pray. Hallelujah. Amen.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Street View. You can visit us online at streetviewpodcast.com. Tune us in again next time for more discussion.